Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Welcome to the mandatory post-fight show. We just saw the last crescendo and a great fight, great card, but we will be getting into everything. Before we get into all of that, remember to follow us on our social media channels. We're at the mandatory TKO. Also hit that like and subscribe button because it helps the channel grow, and we do appreciate you if you already have. Also, you can find us on the audio side. So wherever you find your podcast shows, make sure to follow us on there. Also, leave us a rate and review and give us a 5-star because, I mean, why wouldn't you? And we just saw arguably one of the best cards of all time. We will get into that. But Brian, I think before we get into all the fights, I also want to mention that this is an interactive show, so keep the comments coming because we are going to get into all of your comments. But Brian, your thoughts just really quickly on the entire card and what we saw this afternoon or this evening, because you're on the East Coast there.
I think we're overdoing it a little bit. It was a good card, but I mean, we were people were like, hey, this is the best card we've ever seen. And then we saw a couple of people had to drop out because of illnesses, one of which I didn't think mattered anyway. Floyd Schofield, all due respect, I didn't think he was going to put up much of a fight against Shakur Stevenson. But we saw some good fights. We saw some entertaining fights, and we saw some close decisions, which I think was good. Ultimately, though, the main event is where we're going to start. Dmitry Bivol avenges the first loss. And for some people, I mean, I thought he won the first fight. So, and there are some people who are going to say that he's 2-0 against Artur Beterbiev. I think this one was maybe a little more obvious than the first one, and I feel like this one's going to have less debate, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, I think there might be a little bit of a debate for that because I think both fights were – well, the first one I did have Dmitry Bivol winning as well, but facts are facts and Beterbiev won it on paper, according to the judges. So – right now it's tied, but Dmitry Bivol beats Artur Beterbiev by majority decision. The cards were 114-114, which is a draw, 115-113, and then one other judge had it scored in favor for Dmitry Bivol, 116-112. Drop your comments on what you think about the scorecards. And Brian, we'll start off with you. Let's start off with your scorecard, how you had it scored, and what you thought about the fight.
I had it 115-113 for Bivol. Honestly, it could have been 116-112. One of the judges had it that way. I was toying with the idea of this being a 6-3 fight after 9 rounds. Because Dmitry Bivol, to me, won 1-2 and 3. I think 3 was the one that's a little bit more of a toss-up. I saw some people giving 1 to Beterbiev. I didn't think that was the case. Beterbiev unquestionably won 4 and 5. And then 6, 7, and 8, you saw 4, 5, and 6, I think it was. But in that mid to late range, like the second half of the fight, you saw Bivol actually kick it into another gear, which wasn't as much the case last time around, where Beterbiev really won the fight last time, was sweeping the last three rounds, and it was unquestionable because Bivol was inactive and was, while, you know, still moving around and trying to create those angles, Artur Beterbiev was just walking him down and just throwing kind of what he wanted. And this time, that sort of happened earlier, like started happening in round four, round five, and it was like, okay, is Bivol just conserving his energy to turn it on later? Or is this kind of it? Did he like rush out the gate too quickly? Did he stand and trade too much? Did he catch a punch, like a left hook to the body or something along those lines that he didn't love and just, you know, opting not to exchange anymore? But no, he ended up putting it together. And I felt like, you know, while he was still moving and using the ring to his advantage, which is what he should do against Artur Beterbiev, he was still landing combinations. I felt like he was inside a little bit more. In this fight, I felt like he was taking more chances. And we were talking about, look, if he's going to win this fight on the judges' scorecards, he has to take more chances in these sort of exchanges. And I feel like he did that. I think he did that enough to warrant a victory. So I gave him 7 of the 12 rounds. I thought it was very close. The one judge who had it a draw, I don't think that's crazy at all. But I felt like this would be a Bivol fight, which obviously sets up part three, which I don't think we're going to get in 3-4 months. I feel like both of these guys probably want to rest. They're both older. So maybe in the fall, we'll see it again.
Yeah, I actually had it scored 114-114. I thought it was a draw. I thought through rounds 3, 4, and 5, I gave all of those to Beterbiev. And I thought round 6 was a swing round. So I thought that could be scored very differently. But the first two rounds I gave to Bivol. And then after, in the second half of the fight, I thought Bivol really did turn it on. And he was landing combinations and pretty distinctive combinations on Beterbiev as well. And there was a little bit of a moment where I felt that Beterbiev let the 8th round and the 9th round slip away from him. Like, we didn't see him being like the same type of work rate that he had earlier. So I feel like if you had Beterbiev winning, I don't know about that for this fight, but some people may have. I feel like if you had Bivol winning by just one round in this fight, I would totally be okay with that. And I wouldn't be mad at it, but I had it scored a draw. And I thought that in the later rounds, Bivol did what he had to do to get the victory. So I'm actually not mad at this, but I did have it scored a draw. I do feel like at one point in this fight, Beterbiev was kind of dominating, and then he kind of like took some rounds off, you know. And I feel like this is such a close battle between both of these guys. Some of these rounds I feel like you could have gave to either guy, but round 6 I feel like was a big swing round. Let us know in the comments how you had it. I'm not mad at Dmitry Bivol winning this one. I just feel like 116-112 was a little bit too far apart for one judge. I think if you kind of gave it to Bivol by one round, that's definitely fair. I'm not going to be mad at that because I had it scored a draw. But it does set up, and you know, of course we're going to get possibly a third fight, a trilogy fight between these two, because why wouldn't we? It makes the most sense for both sides in terms of them getting money. Not saying that it's a conspiracy theory here, I'm just saying it makes the most sense. Sure. But you did hear Bivol say in the post fight interview that he was going to take some time off. So here's the thing. If we're actually going by who we thought won in the first fight, Brian and I both thought that Dmitry Bivol won the first fight, right?
Mm-hmm. Very close, but yes. Oh. We also got a super chat, by the way. Just yes. Let you know, we got to put that up here.
We'll get to Tyrone
in a second, yes. Just because we're doing the intro monologue. Well, not monologue, but you know.
Yeah, so if you think about that factor, like, we did have Bivol winning that first fight. Some people thought Beterbiev won, whatever, right? But if you actually take into consideration that Bivol won the second fight, in the third fight, Beterbiev is going to be older, sneakily older, if they don't do it within 3 to 4 months, because Bivol just said he wants to take some time off. So that makes everything really interesting, because if this fight is to happen within the next 6 months, he could wake up one day and just be older. Because that's how much it could hit you. So I would feel like Beterbiev would not want the time off, would not want too much time off from this. So we'll see if the fight happens within 3 or 4 months. I think they were saying it was like 133 days since the first fight or something like that.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I'm okay with Bivol getting the victory here. I felt like he did avenge the first fight. I thought he won the first fight. However, very, very close. I I had it scored a draw, so I'm not going to be too upset about that. Let's get to our great friend of the show, Tyrone, who always donates to the show. Thank you, Tyrone. Anytime you donate to the show, we put your comment up right away. We kind of took a little bit of time because we had to talk about the main event first. But this one is crazy, Tyrone. Joseph Parker did it again. Bevo pulled it off, and I was doubting him. Yep. Yeah. I mean, listen, Joseph Parker knocking up Okoli that early, I did not expect that at all, Brian. Like, I thought, honestly, Joseph Parker would take him. I thought it was going to go the distance. I thought Joseph Parker, I had Joseph Parker winning in my bets. However, I didn't know that he would knock out Bacoli that early.
I should have saw it coming. I was kicking myself for that one because I was like, Joseph Parker. I wanted to take the under. I ended up taking over two knockdowns in that fight. We only got one because after Bacoli just got the first shot, they were like, that's it. And I was like, damn, I kind of wanted them to keep it going. But Bacoli just, you know, he didn't really look like he was in the best shape, so to speak. And Joseph Parker, when I saw that he weighed in at a career high weight for this fight, was it 267 pounds or whatever it was? But whatever, he just was heavier for this in preparation for Daniel Dubois before learning it was Martin Bacoli. And I felt like that was strategic because Joseph Parker, I mean, he's not going to do that irresponsibly. And he looked like he was in good shape. And, you know, we saw that be the difference there. So, I mean, there's not a lot I have for that fight. I just think that for Joseph Parker, you know, fight Daniel Dubois next or fight Alexander Usyk.
Yeah, he wants Usyk. He said that he wants Usyk.
He deserves it. I think he could fight, like, he could fight Daniel Dubois, although he apparently has a WBO interim heavyweight title now, so maybe it is Usyk, but whatever. I think you just figure it out. Like, Joseph Parker should get either Daniel Dubois or Alexander Usyk next. It's amazing that we're in 2025 and we're like, Joseph Parker is the guy in the heavyweight division who deserves a title shot more than anybody else. Joseph yeah. Parker. You know what I mean? Because Deontay Wilder's cooked. Anthony Joshua's cooked. Jared Anderson, I'm not going to say cooked like for good, but he took a big step back and looked uninspired in his last fight. Moses Itama is not ready yet. Fabio Wardley, not quite there yet. Jit Caballero, who knocked out an old Jilei Zhang, who I think is getting a lot of praise for that knockout, and particularly for his body work. I wouldn't say he's more deserving than Joseph Parker either, so... We're at a spot where Joseph Parker has really rejuvenated himself and is now like one of the best heavyweights in the world again.
Yeah, it's actually pretty impressive if you look at his like last three fights and the run that he's been on, the resurgence. And I think that's why it was such a good story with him and Daniel Dubois. They were supposed to fight. So hopefully we get that fight. Still, I think it would be really entertaining. But nonetheless, I do agree that Joseph Parker should get a shot against Alexander Usyk. I think that would be entertaining. Usyk is, he's just in a different league than anyone else, but it would really be interesting actually to see him in a fight with Joseph Parker. And just, you know what? I think Joseph Parker deserves a lot of credit because I think a lot of people thought he fell off. So for him to have this resurgence, and you're right, Brian, be one of the top heavyweights right now in the world. I mean, that's pretty crazy. I just want the truth. Good friend of the show just said Bacoli got hit with a perfect shot. Yeah. I mean, and it was kind of like delayed too, right? And that's when you know, when I saw his legs give out, I was like, it's a wrap.
Yeah.
And you could tell Bacoli, like, not in shape. He took this fight on late notice. So, I mean, he had everything against him in that fight.
Yeah.
Which is definitely interesting. But also a lot of hype on Bacoli too after he beat Jared Anderson. Like after the Jared Anderson win, it was just so much Bacoli hype. Like we were talking about that fight in Jared Anderson after it happened, and people were just, Bacoli was going to get it. Bacoli was going to get it. Well, Bacoli just got knocked out in the second round by Joseph Parker, who does not knock out dudes normally.
That's right. True.
Like Joseph Parker takes you to the cards. Like he's not knocking out dudes. So I think we need to pump our brakes when we see like really good performances once in a while. And I think Bacoli was probably one of the most overrated fighters after a fight last year. He had to be. Joseph Parker does not knock out dudes, Brian. You know this.
Yeah, but Bacoli was 310. You know what I mean? Like, and this is by far the heaviest he's been. He took the fight on very short notice. Look,
he probably waved like a pretty crazy bag in front of him, like, yo, Bacoli. Like,
I do think the Bacoli excitement got a little out of hand last year because it was ridiculous. I wasn't as high on Jared Anderson as others. And I thought Jared Anderson fought a stupid game plan where it's like, all right, this dude who's going to stand and trade, I'm going to stand and trade with him. And it's like, you're more athletic and you have like decent reflexes when you decide to actually counterpunch. But Jared Anderson's at this point, like, I don't even know where the fuck he is. But with Bacoli, like, I'm not going to give him too much shit because like it was on very, very short notice. He took this fight ultimately. And for me, it's all about like, all right, what does he look like in a real training camp ahead of whatever his next fight is? I don't know what that's going to look like, quite frankly. But I mean, Oleksandr Usyk versus Joseph Parker is a great fight to me to make at this stage. I think that's the fight because I think if Daniel Dubois, Joseph Parker still makes a lot of sense. But if you're looking at the heavyweight division right now, you can put Joseph Parker in there with a lot of different guys. That would make a ton of Daniel Dubois in there with a lot of different guys that would make a ton of sense. Mark Bacoli, interestingly enough, was ranked number 2 by the WBO, as was mentioned on the broadcast, also 2 by the WBA and 3 by the IBF. And usually somebody who's got that level of ranking doesn't come in on 48 hours notice. So I wonder how much of a hit he's going to take given the context of this performance. But Daniel Dubois, I mean, is he going to fight, I don't know, Fabio Wardley next? That's something that would be fun in England. I think Daniel Dubois would win that fight, but I think they seem like they want to get one of the dudes who fights in Riyadh a title shot. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and you know what? We'll get to some more comments right now, Brian. Because we got some comments on the main event. Ace_317. I love the fight and it was close, but I do think Bivol won the fight. Yeah. But what I think is more interesting is what happens next. A good fight to make would be Beterbiev Benavidez for a title shot. So this is interesting. Say if Bivol, because I think this is an important piece, Brian. Mm-hmm. If Bivol ends up taking some time off like he said he was going to take, what's next then?
Depends how much time. Because if it's a couple extra months, like If we could still get Beterbiev Bivol 3 in October, then whatever. Like, that's fine. If he's talking about, I'm not coming back until next February, then yes, Beterbiev will probably need something to do in the meantime. I don't know if I'd be running to fight David Benavidez of all people, but Artur Beterbiev is 40 years old. He turned 40 in January. Dmitry Bivol is 34. And I think he just turned 34 in December. So I think ultimately Dmitry Bivol, like, I don't think he's going to take that much time to where Artur Beterbiev is going to need a stay busy fight. That would surprise me a little bit.
Yeah.
I still think, because logically, I mean, these guys fight twice a year, like the upper echelon guys. Hell, a lot of them fight once a year and some of them fight once every other year. But in the case of Dmitry Bivol, Artur Beterbiev, I still think it's a fight we can get late in the year. So I wouldn't stress out about, hey, Benavidez needs to fight Artur Beterbiev. It's like, no. And if I'm Artur Beterbiev, honestly, I'm not taking another fight next unless it's the Dmitry Bivol fight. I don't care when it is. Like, I'm just going to fight for the title again. And if I win, I win. I lose, I lose. But this is it. Like, there's no other fight that should interest him at this point.
Yeah, and at the same time, like, I don't think Beterbiev has to entertain a Benavidez at this point, right? Like, this is the fight that I think everyone wants to see now because it's a trilogy fight. It's for Undisputed, and these guys have given us two really, really good fights, two very good entertaining fights. So I do believe even if it's a six-month delay, I think it might even help Beterbiev because he's still wearing that on his knee. Like, he's getting older, sneakily older, like really old at this point. And I think that he could easily just beat, if not easily, but if he could beat Bivol in the trilogy fight, I think he could sail off into the sunset and just call it a career. Because what else would Beterbiev have to prove at that point?
Both of them. Both of them could. Jay drops an interesting comment. We'll get to that later. But that's one of my favorite things to talk about, as you know. It's just what's going on, like, sort of underneath the hood out there. Speaking of, we did get a comment about Carlos Adames. I don't know if we want to touch on that right now, or do we want to wrap up on the light heavyweights? But
let's wrap up on the light heavyweights and the like in the heavyweights, because I think then we can move on to that, because there was a robbery today.
we knew there'd be at least one.
Yeah.
Fitting that it was that one. We'll get to why in a second. But yeah, we know what's next. We know what should be next. Is better is Bivol better BF3. I'm certain it's going to be out there in Saudi Arabia again. The atmosphere, that's probably the best atmosphere that they've had for a fight at any point. So I guess
I didn't even think it was that good.
No, I mean, I'm not saying it was like an amazing one, but it was better. It was better this time around. Although weirdly, like, I feel like it was a very pro Dmitry Bivol crowd, and I don't know why that is necessarily.
I'm not quite sure, because there's a lot of better BF fans, you know, in the house as well. Lots of support there for both of those guys. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the only fight that these guys should be looking to, fighting each other for the trilogy fight. I don't think they got to look elsewhere. I think Benavidez has other options as well, and we'll kind of see what happens. But obviously, interesting name, because, you know, when he beat David Morrell, that was kind of the rumor that was going around that he would be fighting the winner of Dmitry Bivol and Better Bia. But because Bivol won this one, sets up a trilogy fight. So I don't think anything else is that confusing. As for Martin Bacoli, yeah, he takes an L and he was ranked very high. So let's see kind of what happens. But I would still, Brian, love to see Daniel Dubois and Joseph Parker. But I do believe that Joseph Parker also deserves that title shot against Alexander Usyk at this point. You guys, drop some comments below. Let us know what you think. Brian, I think now it's time for us to get to the robbery. Right? Because Carlos Adames clearly beat Shiraz in that fight. And I didn't have it close. Did you?
I had Adames winning 8-4. So 116-112.
That's not close.
Not very close. No.
No.
No. But there was a video circulating. There was a video circulating that
yes.
that Turk went to Hamza Shiraz's corner and was telling him, like, yo, you're down. Because like people are basically implying that he looked at the judge's scorecards. I couldn't quite make out what he was saying. But people are implying that Turk looked at the judges' scorecards and was telling Hamza, you're down by this much. You need to pick it up, whatever, whatever. I'm not going to accuse anybody of anything, but all I'm saying is it's very clear. If you just look underneath the hood of this fight, Carlos Adames was sort of chosen to be the guy that Hamza Shiraz takes the title off of. Like, he was grooved to be the number one contender by the WBC. The WBC obviously has a lot of ties to Riyadh and boxing in Saudi Arabia. A lot of the titles or a lot of the fights that we see are from like WBC titles, WBC sort of interim titles and things like that, like out there, whatever the case may be. Tyson Fury serving as one example, having defended his title out there. So Carlos Adames is champion. Hamza Shiraz becomes the number one contender. And Shiraz, even being the number one contender, we were kind of like, is he really that good? You know what I mean? Just sort of leading into it. He knocks out Tyler Denny in his last fight. That was at Wembley. And before that, he beat Amo Williams. That was the impressive performance. But also, Amo Williams was like a fellow prospect. You know, it was kind of an undefeated versus undefeated situation. It was like, all right, cool. I guess Shiraz is going to be that guy. He becomes the number one contender. And Carlos Adames is also a pretty big underdog for this fight. Like, you were seeing plus 250, plus 235, plus 240. And I'm like, wait, really? Am I tripping? And he's chosen to defend his title. And Shiraz is like, all right, we're going to crown him now. The crowd was booing Adames on the intro. They were cheering for Shiraz. We kind of know what was up there. And I thought Shiraz got outboxed easily. Yeah. Like, he landed some jabs early on. The commentators on both the DAZN and the Sky Sports broadcast, because I was going back and forth because of reasons. And the commentators were basically, you know, they were Hamza Shiraz favored, basically. Like, not cheering him on necessarily, but mainly talking about him and what he could do. He's from the UK, so yeah, duh, that tracks, that makes sense. And Adames wasn't getting enough credit for the work he was doing. And ultimately, he just stayed busy. He was rolling and slipping a lot of these jabs. You could tell he watched a ton of Mike Tyson growing up. He's got New York ties, so that makes a lot of sense. And he was just, he took it to the champion, to the number one contender and proved why he's a champion. And he's still the champion, but he got robbed. He should have won that fight 8-4. One judge had it 118, 110. And when I heard it, I was like, that's not that crazy. But once they said 115, 114 Shiraz, one of the judges, I was like, oh God, here it comes. And there it is.
Man, we were talking about people being overrated, and I talked about Martin Bacoli, who came in on late notice, though. So let's give him, you know, a little bit of a
yes,
give him some credit there, right? he didn't prepare like 48 hours notice, whatever.
Yeah.
Shiraz might be arguably one of the overrated boxers, one of the most, because what I saw against Carlos Adames, remember, people are like, oh, Shiraz is going to knock him out. Shiraz is going to knock him out. That's not what I was looking at during this fight. Carlos Adames was showing off his speed. He was walking him down. Shiraz was trying to fight off the back foot. His work rate was not high at all. Sure, he landed some power punches, some nice body punches here and there, but Carlos Adames, I thought, dominated him in the ring. Like, it wasn't a question to me who won. And even the commentators, like, you talked about it, like, they were kind of hyping up Shiraz, but a lot of them also felt that Adames won. Like, they're, like, I,
to be fair,
I
remember, yes, yes.
I was watching the Sky broadcast, and they were like, well, it's for sure that Carlos Adames won this one. Like, they were sure yes. that he won. And yes, I think everyone true. Consensus thought that Carlos Adames won as well. So when it turned out that there was no winner, essentially, that actually blew me, because then we see the clip come out where Turk is like, two, you're down 2-1.
I could pull it up. I have it.
Yeah, like, you should pull this up, because this is, okay, so if Turk is putting on these fights like this, like, you don't see Al Haymon doing this.
Although you did see Frank Warren in a fucking panic walking back and forth, you know, and
that makes sense, though.
Telling, right? Hamza Shiraz's promoter, for our casual fans, hi, thank you for watching. And he basically was like, yo, step it up. Like, you're losing this, which a promoter, yeah, like that.
A promoter, like, yeah. But a guy, like, you don't see Al Haymon doing this. Like, Brian, find the clip.
You don't see Al Haymon, period.
Yeah, it's true. Like, he's like, you know, in the back, right? So this is, I think this is a very interesting piece.
Let's yeah, take a look. So here we go. So here's, we have sound. I could play it with sound, I think. So this is Turk with Hamza Shiraz in the corner and basically telling him, like, hey, you're down, whatever. This is in between rounds. It doesn't specify which round, but I'll play it.
2-1. You lose it. 2-1. You have pressure.
Like, I'm reducing by 2 points. And I probably got to cut it there before YouTube kicks us because of the bone crusher shit. But he's telling him there, let me just play it on mute. You know, you're down 2 points. And he's like,
I did like that they played that, though. I was like, oh, this is kind of a vibe. I haven't heard that song since high school. So that was like really funny to me.
So he's pointing, he's got the two and all this shit. And it's like, ugh, you know, not ideal there.
I think that's a bad look. That's a bad look. Why is this even happening?
Yeah. Ultimately.
Like, I want to get into the conversation about Saudi later, because we got a comment about it. Because I have a lot of things to say. I even sent Brian like a voice note during the fights on WhatsApp. About everything going on in Saudi, but
I want to say one more thing about this fight. I don't need a rematch. I'm good. I don't think Shiraz should get right into. I don't think he had a performance that's worthy of a rematch. Just because it was scored poorly doesn't mean he should get a rematch against Carlos Adames. That's point number one. Point number two: if they do have a rematch, because they've seemed very hell bent on getting Shiraz a championship, it should not be in Saudi, even though it will be. And it shouldn't be in the UK, even though it could be. Because Carlos Adames is the champion and he should be able to defend it now at a place that makes a little bit more sense for the champion. Okay, wherever that may be. I'm sure that they'll just pay him a shit ton of money and be like, hey, come defend it back here, you know, in Riyadh or whatever. We'll boo the shit out of you and then make sure the deck is stacked against you. So there's that. And this also reminded me of, like, this happens sometimes in boxing. Just because you have a prospect who is now a contender and you sort of groove a championship for them, it doesn't mean they're all of a sudden, you know, just going to win that title. I remember a long time ago, Christopher Diaz, who was a super featherweight contender that Top Rank was pushing as one of these next Puerto Rican stars, along with Redacted, who was in prison. And they got him a title shot for, guess what title? The vacant WBO title, because with Top Rank, it's always a WBO title. And he's fighting this dude named Masayuki Ito for the title. And it was in Kissimmee, a lot of Puerto Ricans in Kissimmee, Florida, which is right outside of Orlando. And he lost. He got his ass whooped by decision. That's what this sort of reminded me of, except Carlos Adames didn't get the win that he deserved. He got a draw. So there's that. Yeah, not ideal. But Carlos Adames, I thought, fought very well and raised his stock after this performance. And people could stop doubting him now. He's legit.
And Shiraz might be one of the most overrated boxers, as I said, because he had a terrible performance. And that's a performance where I think he had to go, where it was a very big stage, where I think he had to show out, and he didn't. He clearly lost, and they gifted him a draw with that. So, yeah, I don't want to see a rematch for that either. And we'll see what happens to Shiraz, but they are definitely building him up to be a champ. And I think he has the fan base. Like, he definitely has the fan base. I think they love him in the UK, but nonetheless, I think that Carlos Adames got robbed. Drop your comments.
We got some good ones.
Comments. Yeah, yeah, let's get to them.
Let's do it. Let's get to Jay, actually. I don't like the Saudi. They're paying too much. Many boxers become lazy. I won't co-sign the very first part of that because, you know, obviously. But what I think, and I also think it's an incomplete sentence, but it's a thought. I think what the sort of danger of what we're seeing, though, from a long-term boxing perspective is, like, the money that these guys are making from the Saudis, it's going to have other people who are just, like, maybe slightly above club fighter territory thinking that they're worth tens of millions of dollars just because they could fight in Saudi Arabia. And as long as they keep getting the money out there, like, long-term, it's going to make other fights more difficult to sort of string together. I think that, like, there's a shelf life for all of this stuff. So I think the card was cool. They stacked it heavily. And I think if you're Shakur Stevenson, like, I don't know if I would have signed up to be third last. I don't know if I was Virgil Ortiz, I'd sign up to be at a mid-card fight against Israel Madrimov. And I also think they could spread this out a little bit more. Like, I feel like you could have had, like, take the two best fights, take a couple of other really good ones. Like, you could have had other events out of it instead of making this one big one that, you know, I do wonder what the numbers are going to be on this and how many non-boxing fans were like, hey, I've heard about this, and, you know, Artur Beterbiev, Dmitry Bivol, I'm going to tune into that. Or casual boxing fans. I'm sure some casuals did, but I do wonder how it's going to perform, especially stacked up against, you know, Tank Davis, who's in a one-sided fight next week, but he's a big star. And I would love to see, like, how many buys each events get, how many interactions, all those different things, because Tank is a different type of star, at least around here, than Artur Beterbiev and Dmitry Bivol, with all due respect. So
I also don't think it was promoted the same. Like, I feel like the Last Crescendo is such a big card, and I also feel like when Floyd Schofield dropped out, that they should have moved Shakur down. Like, the NFL does it all the time.
Have him fight a different card.
Yeah, or no, they could have kept him on, but maybe just dropped him all the way to the beginning of the fight. I'm not going to sit here and lie, because I felt like the Virgil Ortiz fight in Madrimov was a way better fight, and yes, I thought that could have been moved up because it was one of the most entertaining fights on this card that happened today. But when Flo Schofield couldn't fight, it kind of took off a little bit of the cachet of that fight against Shakur Stevenson. And I was like, they should kind of move it down. Not to say that that was an extremely boring fight. Like, Shakur Stevenson did his thing. He got the stoppage. He was supposed to get the stoppage against a guy like Josh Padley. But I didn't think it was as entertaining as the other fights listed. Let's go to Steven. Sadly, it's to be expected. This is his plaything. Now, if he makes the sliced throat gesture to a judge. I mean,
I'm not going to go there. but
is he talking about Turk?
Yes, he's talking about Turk. Who else?
Okay, well, I think there's a lot of questions.
You've seen the video? You've seen, I don't know who he did. Who did he do that to? He made the throat slash gesture.
Oh, my goodness. I haven't seen this video. It sounds scary.
But I don't know if he was telling somebody to stop doing something, and I don't know in what way. I don't, like, he did it at a fight. He was doing, you know, it to funny? Somebody. But the person he was doing it to wasn't on camera.
What's funny is, like, Turk has so many weird moments on camera. It's, like, really weird. Yeah. They were interviewing him on Sky Sports, and he doesn't leave the interview. He stays there with the interviewer, and someone comes and whispers in his ear. He's like, one moment. and someone comes and whispers in his ear, and they whisper for like 15 minutes, and he comes back, he's like, sorry. And then he does like the interview. I'm like, what is going on over here? Like, this is like ridiculous. And nobody says anything to him because he's Turk and they're in Saudi. The one thing that I will say, and this is like, let's get to some more comments.
I'll give them credit for tonight because they moved the card along. There was no card giveaway. There was no fucking.
I liked it. I liked the pace of it.
Performance. I like that they moved it and that we're doing our post fight show. We started legitimately at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific PM, which is great because I was fearing that it was going to be 8:30. So I guess they got better in that regard. But still, like all the other stuff around it, it's still just weird.
All right, let's take a look at some more comments. Mark Adamus got his win ripped off, but at least he wasn't robbed. I felt like he was robbed, dude. I don't think Shiraz won that fight, and I think a lot of people know that he didn't win that fight.
No, but I think Mark is saying, like, at least he didn't get robbed of his title. Like, okay, at least yeah, they didn't give him the loss, which
yeah.
on the robbery scale, you'll take that. I hope Adamus, I hope he gets a fair shake in his next fight.
For sure. I just want the truth. Adamus' head movement was nasty. Yes. Like,
excellent.
He fought very well where I was watching him in the ring and I was like, whoa, he's like way more skilled than Shiraz. Like, there's a difference in skill there. And they can talk about Shiraz being skilled and being great puncher, but he wasn't using his range the way he was supposed to against Adamus. Adamus is walking him down, doing whatever he wanted, landing nasty combos, and Shiraz was just taking it. You trying to use it the high guard. I was like, what are you doing, bro? Like, use your size. Isn't that what you're supposed to do? But he didn't have an answer for him. Tyrone
was using his jab. He was trying to use his jab a little bit too, but didn't even commit to that. Like
he
that.
Didn't. Like, he didn't commit to the jab at all.
You're right. Like Adamus is so much more skilled. You could tell. Like Shiraz is just very tall.
And the speed factor. Speed factor too. And I felt like Shiraz was just trying to time a good big shot because he does have power. And that's just not what was happening in that fight.
You know how when you're in front of a heavy bag and you're like you're like, I just punched my fucking microphone back.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
When you're like measuring your shots and you're like this, and then you're going to throw a big right hand. So he's like just pawing his jab a little bit, like out here, out here, out here. And Adamus is every single punch, just every single punch is moving his head. He's not landing anything. So he's not even letting him measure and come into the big shot. And then Adamus, I think he ended up landing like an overhand right and just sort of shoving him off. I was really impressed with Adamus as somebody who was high on him anyway, coming into this fight.
Yeah, I just want the truth says Turkey did, I guess, the slice throat thing to a ref when AJ fought.
Is that true? I thought it was from before that.
I don't know if that's true. That's actually funny, dude. Ace_317. If Beevil says he's not fighting for a year and a half, then should Better BF still wait and not take? No, if it's a year and a half, then Better BF has to take a fight.
I don't think he could do it for a year and a half either, because I think they'll start stripping him of the titles.
Yeah.
So that would be crazy. But no, I don't think it'll be that.
Adam Hurley, Shiraz uses his size more than anything. He didn't use it in this fight though, Adam. He didn't
tried, but
all right.
Do you want to talk about Shakur?
I do.
Okay. Because we gotta get to Virgil Ortiz too. I think that's way more.
That's the fight that I'm waiting for, because you know that was to me one of the most entertaining fights.
Shakur will be quick. It'll be very quick, but we could just do that real quick. What was your takeaways from?
Okay,
from
so I'm not gonna lie. I did fall asleep from round three. Rounds 3 to 7, like I took a quick cat nap. I was like, I'm not gonna lie, I was tired today. Like and Brian knows this too. I was legit like exhausted, and I was like on my couch, and wasn't much going on in that fight. Like I was like, I know what's gonna happen here.
I woke up during the Joshua Buatsi Callum Smith fight. Like I was tired last night,
and I can't believe Joshua Buatsi like lost against Callum Smith. Like that's crazy. I don't want to hear any more Buatsi talk. I had like, you know, the UK fans, if you're from the UK and you're watching this, so many UK fans were like riding hard for Buatsi, like crazy hard for him. Like, and Callum Smith is on the latter end of his career. And for Callum Smith to beat Joshua Buatsi, like props to Callum Smith, yo, because I was counting him out. Like, I didn't think he could win that fight.
He took it to him. took it to after he lost the better BF. I was like, all right, like that might be it. Mm. And now he's got an interim light heavyweight title, which also means, by the way, like to answer Ace, if Bivol takes like a big absence, like, I mean, Callum Smith is kind of the number one contender for the WBO title now. So Callum Smith versus Artur Beterbiev again.
Oh, I don't know if I want to see that again.
In the meantime, while we wait for Dmitry Bivol, hope not. Would you watch David Benavidez versus Callum Smith?
Yeah, I'd watch that. You know what? Callum Smith has actually had a very good career. Like, as much as I counted him out against Buatsi, like, you take a look at Callum Smith's career and his resume and the guys that he's been in the ring with, like, he's not afraid to fight anybody. And he's a good fighter. Like, he's not someone that's, like, a trash can, right? Like, he's going to give you a good fight. So, let's get to Marlon 2631 because he's getting on this Shakur thing. I like Shakur Stevenson. He's one of my favorite boxers, actually. I just wish he was more entertaining. So if he fought Floyd Schofield, like, I would have been very zoned in into the fight. But this was him against Josh Padley, and I did not care because I knew what Shakur had to do. I love that he came out to against all odds. I love that he knocked out, he got the stoppage against Padley. That was what he was supposed to do. But like, it wasn't the fight that had the most cachet, right? And I'm not gonna lie, like, for some strange reason I was really tired and I did nap through rounds 3-7, and I woke up and then I ended up seeing him get the stoppage in the ninth round. So, I mean, it's fine.
Yeah. I'll say this, like, Shakur, he did what he had to do. Some people still wanted more. And it was like, Josh Padley was taking some of these punches, which I think probably says more about Josh Padley's toughness. And, you know, Shakur ended up getting the stoppage, like, whatever, like, that's kind of it. Like, we want to see Shakur in a big fight. I want to see him against Tank. I don't know if that's going to happen. Tank tweeted out LOL after watching the fight.
Yo, but you know what? Let's give Shakur some props because he took some chances today. Like,
yeah,
he
was against a guy with four knockouts. Yeah, against a guy with four knockouts. Who's a full-time electrician. Yes.
He had to, though, because if he didn't do that and he was fighting too safe, then I would definitely be hating. Steven says Shakur's fights are good for bathroom and kitchen breaks.
I think Shakur is like one of the most talented guys in the sport.
For sure.
I just want to see him fight adequate level competition and in an interesting way. The adequate level competition part is not totally his fault because there are guys who have apparently ducked him to some extent. It feels like we could have gotten him versus William Zepeda multiple times. And William Zepeda's over here, you know, messing around with Tevin Farmer and barely beating him, getting knocked down by Tevin Farmer. And now they're having the rematch for that fight in Mexico, where it's like, oh, we want to really make sure William Zepeda gets to retain his interim title so that he could eventually fight Shakur Stevenson. It's like, what are we doing? You know, this doesn't make sense. Just fight Shakur. Shakur. Like,
so Adam Hurley says, I was hoping for Padley to KO Shakur. Padley took some big shots and stood in there, man. You got to give him some props.
I'll Marlon watch Padley again. Padley was fun. I'll watch him again.
He was entertaining from what I saw when I didn't fall asleep.
Oh, and I'll say this too. Like, I wasn't too interested in Shakur versus Floyd Schofield because I felt like he was just going to just outbox him. And
he was, but I mean, Floyd is Schofield's like a young guy coming up. So yeah. I was interested in that fight. I was very interested in that fight, but I felt like Shakur would have dominated him. Marlon 2631 says the Shakur hate is insane. Adam Hurley says, you'll have to tell me how someone can be a Shakur fan someday, Chantel. Listen, there's a lot of Shakur fans out there. The thing about it, he has such a high IQ. He's so skilled. One of the things in boxing, when you go box and you get a trainer, what's the main thing, right? You want to throw punches and hit people, but you don't want to get hit. Like, you're not supposed to get hit. That's the whole point of it. But I think for Shakur, the issue is that he's so tactical and he's so skilled. And like, when he actually boxes, it's beautiful. Like, he's a true technician. But in the business that he's in, it's entertainment. So if you're not giving us an entertaining fight where you're, you know, knocking out dudes or throwing a lot of punches and the work rate is high, that takes away viewership sometimes. Cause that's what, you know, a casual fan might want to see. For me, I've never wanted a knockout. Like, I've never been a fan that wants a knockout. So I do like Shakur's style. I just wish he would let his hands go a little bit more. And just remember, guys, like, this was kind of a knock back in the day on Devin Haney, where they were like...
Floyd Mayweather too.
right? That, yeah, talk about this all the time. And so that's kind of why when we talk about Devin Haney and Shakur Stevenson, I've always kind of been more on Devin's side because Devin takes a little bit more chances in getting hit. Like even the Loma fight, like he fought his ass off in that fight. Right. But before, Devin would play it safe and he used to kind of have like the same shoulder roll as Floyd and not get hit a lot. So it just depends what type of boxing that you like. But Shakur is, I think you could argue he's one of the most talented and best boxers in the game right now. Like there's no doubt about it. So we'll see. I want to get to this comment though, before we move on. Sorry, not that one. This one from Adam Hurley. Better Biev, Benavidez would be way better than the fight today. That's a banger of a fight. I just don't think Better Biev takes it if the trilogy fight is not too far away.
I also don't know if it'd be better. It depends. Like to me, a good fight doesn't have to entail guys are just beating the shit out of each other. Like I actually really enjoyed both Bivol Better Biev fights, but I like counterpunching. I like Bivol's style a lot when he has somebody in there who could actually push him, and Artur Better Biev does that more than anybody he's fought against. Artur Better Biev has done better against Dmitry Bivol than Canelo Alvarez did by a lot. So
I agree with that, Adam Hurley. I wouldn't say better, but I think I would enjoy it just as much. I like fights where guys are going to beat the shit out of each other. So I would be obsessed with this fight. If it was Better Biev and Benavidez, I would be obsessed with this fight. Like you know what, Adam, you're right. I would definitely be down for it, but I do like the fact of like, you know, Bivol being the technician. And I think Better Biev doesn't get enough credit for his skill. Like I've said it so many times, he has one of the best jabs. He's extremely accurate. And so that's why I thought this fight was really entertaining. And I think Better Biev's always going to be underrated in that, in being super skilled, because everyone thinks about his power.
I'm just saying, I don't need war for excitement. I can get excited about other elements of the sport, but war is exciting at the same time. Like that would be a very, very exciting fight. I don't know if it'd be more exciting for me than the third fight between Bivol and Better Biev.
I'd be down. So yeah. Steven, if Tank lands on Shakur like Padley did, the viewers won't be the only ones taking a siesta.
This is what I'm worried about. Cause I think the world of Shakur's talent. But if Tank hits him in round 8 with one of those uppercuts, like I how does he respond? You know, like he's never been hit the way Tank could hit him. I don't even know if it's been close. Like he's been in there with Oscar Valdez and Edwin de los Santos, and I don't think any of them staggered him the way a Gervonta Davis may. So I have questions about that too. I think he could, like, yes, he could do all the, like Gervonta Davis has said this, like when you do all that boxing shit, how much does it really matter if you can't hurt somebody? Paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said. And it's like, yeah, you kind of have a point, because this is why I thought for years Deontay Wilder would beat Anthony Joshua. It's like, yeah, Anthony Joshua will outbox him for 8 rounds, and then in the 9th round Deontay Wilder will just catch him. And Gervonta Davis can do the same thing, except he also has boxing ability, a lot of it. He's very smart. He's not going to let you just do the same shit you do to Josh Padley and Edwin de los Santos and Robson Cosesao and all these guys. Like Gervonta Davis is also a thinker in the ring. Like, yeah, you'll win the first couple rounds against him, you'll feel good about yourself, but once he kicks it into that gear in the middle of the fight, no one's been able to stop him yet.
No, and I think that makes for a really interesting fight. And that's the thing, I don't feel like Shakur has been crazy tested yet. I don't think so. I think Oscar Valdez was a very good fight, but I just think for Shakur Stevenson, like when you take a look at his resume, like who's really hurt him? It's never happened. And so the thing is, people don't talk about Tank skill enough. Like we just talked about Artur Better Biev, because these guys are like two of the greatest knockout artists of this generation. Tank is skilled. Like he sets traps, and whether it's a body shot or an uppercut, like you're going to feel his power. He doesn't throw as much, but when he does, it's accurate. And that's the thing about Tank that doesn't get discussed enough. So I think that's the fight that we all want. And we said we weren't going to stay on Shakur for a long time. So I think we should move on now, Brian, to
Ortiz. One more thing, just real quick. What's next for Shakur Stevenson? Do you think it's William Zepeda?
It should be Zepeda, but I want to know when Loma's coming back. Because I still think that's a good fight for Shakur to take, because Loma will make it interesting.
I think Keyshawn Loma because of the top rank
piece. I don't want that.
What happened first?
They're just feeding Loma to everybody now.
Well, I don't know if that's a feed. I don't know if Keyshawn wins that fight.
Yo, from what I saw from Keyshawn in his last fight, I'm sold.
Against a very different level opponent than even Loma is now.
Yeah.
You know, like I think Keyshawn would be the betting favorite, but
it would be a tough fight, but I just feel like I feel like I'm a true believer in Keyshawn after his last fight.
Okay.
100%. Like that was very, very impressive to me. So I don't want to see Loma just get fed to the wolves at this point in his career. And I think that's why Loma's also taking a break. So we'll see what happens. But I would love to see Shakur Stevenson against Lomachenko. I'd like to see Tank against Loma. But we'll see if Zepeda ends up fighting Shakur. I think that's a very interesting fight. Or maybe he does fight Schofield just later.
Maybe. That's true, too. Zepeda fights Tevin Farmer next month in Cancun. So assuming he wins that, Shakur versus Zepeda, I mean, you could do that late summer, fall, something along those lines. Steven asks, what was your fight of the night? Callum versus Boatsy was a banger. Fight of the night might be the fight we're about to talk about. Virgil Ortiz, Israel Madrimov. I don't know.
I was very entertained.
Like, I was entertained by this, but how do y'all feel, chat, about Virgil Ortiz coming out of this performance? I think he looked like Virgil Ortiz, which, you know, for better or worse, I mean, there's some flaws there that I feel like are potentially exploitable. I just don't think Madrimov is the kind of guy to exploit all of them, though he did early on.
I thought it was a classic Virgil Ortiz type of fight. He's going to go in there. He's going to have a high work rate. He's going to get hit, and he's going to put on a good performance, show his power. And I thought Virgil Ortiz did enough in that fight to win that fight. I thought Madrimov did, you know, have some good moments in that fight too, but Virgil Ortiz won that. And I thought near the end, he looked really good.
Are we sure he won the fight? Is my question.
Yeah, I'm more than sure he won the fight.
Okay.
People were saying it was close. Did you have Madrimov winning that one?
No. But I like 114-114 was on the table. Like he had two 115-113s and there was a 117-111, which I thought was very, very generous. Very generous.
Yeah, I don't think I agreed with that one, but I thought Virgil definitely did enough to win that fight. And
it's two fights now back to back.
Who does he fight next? But that's the thing that I like about Virgil is he's not perfect and he makes mistakes, but then he makes adjustments and he ends up winning. Like that's what I love about Virgil Ortiz.
Great point.
And he's arguably one of the most entertaining fighters right now. And you might say that he may have ducked Sander Zayas, ha ha ha. But he hasn't really ducked anybody.
Xander Zayas says he ducked Xander Zayas.
Okay, yeah. But you know your Puerto Rican roots, so you might agree with that. But I'm just saying that I think Virgil Ortiz did his thing against a very tough Madrimov. Like Madrimov, before he fought Bud, was undefeated. And I think a lot of people weren't impressed with Bud in that Madrimov fight, but he's a tricky fighter. Like, you know those tricky fighters, like a Sandor Martin. Like, these guys are tough to beat. And so it's always going to be a little bit different on the scorecard. So I was impressed with Virgil Ortiz because I do believe that fight could have gone either way, but he did his thing. And so I think we got to put some more respect on Virgil Ortiz's name. That's what I think. He's beating tough guys out there.
We'll talk about what's next for Virgil Ortiz after beating Israel Madrimov because this could go one of a lot of different directions. Do we need to put in Xander Zayas against Madrimov now just to see where he's at?
Is he ready for Madrimov? Because I think Madrimov is a tough fight.
Yes, he's ready for Madrimov. Yes.
I don't know because I think we still need to see more from Xander. I think he needs a one more name than Madrimov and then a big fight. That's personally what I think, Brian. Like, here's 10 minutes on Xander Zayas. Like, are we doing this again? Like, come on.
No, because I'm like, we're treating Madrimov like Xander Zayas can't beat him. I think you could beat him right now. I don't think that's the fight that I don't think that's the fight that they're going to make next, though. I don't think Top Rank is going to be like, all right, let's give you the guy who lost twice in a row, even though they were to Terrence Crawford and Virgil Ortiz. Like, he's going to get the Puerto Rican Day Parade fight. The guy who's campaigning for that is Charles Conwell. This is not about Xander Zayas. Although I do think what's next for Virgil Ortiz, I think a lot of people will say, hey, it should be Xander Zayas potentially, because while Virgil Ortiz has rank and standing and things of that nature, so with this, he retains, going back to the WBC point in Saudi, the WBC interim championship at 154. The WBC champion right now at 154 is Sebastian Fundora. So logically, we should get Fundora, Virgil Ortiz. Fundora, however, is defending his title soon. I think that's in April that he's fighting Cordell Booker. But that's going to be on a PBC card. So business-wise, I wonder how this would get done between Sebastian Fundora and Virgil Ortiz if it were to happen. This fight is actually going to be March 22nd. Sebastian Fundora, Cordell Booker, a friend of the show, Elijah Garcia, also going to be on that card against Terrell Gachet. So is Virgil Ortiz going to get the title shot next is what this comes down to for me. Because that's where he is in terms of rank. He just has a WBC interim title. Let's remember that Sebastian Fundora has a WBC and a WBO. And I feel like boxing is going to boxing here. There's going to be a game of chicken. One of these two sanctioning bodies are going to get a title off of, they're going to force him to vacate. Like somehow they'll be like, hey, you have to fight this person. You have to they'll figure out a way to get the title off of him. It feels like, because WBO interim champion is Terrence Crawford. Terrence Crawford, we know, is going to fight Canelo Alvarez. He ain't fighting Sebastian Fundora. Virgil Ortiz is the interim WBC champion. And it's like, is the WBO going to figure out a way to get the title, creative way to get the title off of Fundora so that they could have Xander Zayas fight for the vacant title? Or is WBC going to figure it out so that Virgil Ortiz just has a title? I think some shady shit's going to happen at 154 over the next few months. That's my feel on this.
Well, I think that's the fight to make, though, is Virgil Ortiz and Sebastian Fundora. And I do think Xander Zayas should fight a guy like Jesus Ramos. And then if he was to beat Jesus Ramos, then he should fight Virgil Ortiz. That's what I think.
Because Jesus Ramos is on that card, by the way.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I think that Virgil Ortiz would beat Sebastian Fundora. And that's a good fight. I wonder if Fundora goes back to his old ways. Because against Tim Zhu, like, he was actually like fighting like how he should fight. And I was like, oh, this is not like how Sebastian Fundora fights. But as you know, like, Virgil Ortiz will make you fight in his pace, and he'll make you fight on the inside. So Fundora's gonna be like, oh, let me go back to my old ways and fight in the inside, and boom, get knocked out by Virgil Ortiz. Like, if Virgil Ortiz and Sebastian Fundora fought, I would bet the knockout. Virgil Ortiz by KO or stoppage. That's what I would be betting. Yeah. But I think that's the fight to make. Virgil Ortiz, Sebastian Fundora. That's a massive fight. And the Mexican fans would love it. The Mexican-American fans would eat that fight up. Like, you could do that in, because Virgil Ortiz is from Texas. You could do that fight, like, in Dallas. You could do that fight in San Antonio. Like, you could do that fight in Arizona if you wanted to. That's a good fight.
The WBC rankings are funny because, number one, so it's Fundora, Ortiz, because they're the two champions. In terms of contenders, number one is it's Serhii Bohachuk, who Virgil Ortiz beat, barely, but beat by majority decision. Two is Madrimov. We'll see where he is after this. Three is Xander Zayas. Four is Charles Conwell. I just had the thought, what if Charles Conwell, he's doing all this campaigning for Xander Zayas, and I'm here saying, like, I don't know if Top Rank is going to do Xander Zayas versus Charles Conwell Puerto Rican Day Parade weekend. I feel like it's going to be like slightly a cut under that in terms of level of competition. We could talk about Charles Conwell in a second in terms of where he's at. But I feel like, what if Charles Conwell just fights Virgil Ortiz next? Like, what if that's the fight that we see for the interim title in the meantime?
But it's not the best fight, you know? Like, give us Virgil.
That's a pretty good fight.
I think it's a good fight, but I'd rather see Virgil and Fundora. What's the holdup? Well, what are we waiting for?
He has to be Cordell Booker. I don't think that's a layup for Sebastian Fundora.
That's true. What about Bakram? Are we forgetting about him? I think he's scary. Like, are people avoiding him?
Probably. He's an IBF champion. He's not a sexy name, and he has a style that's going to piss you off and probably, like, destroy you. Like, Bakram Mirtazayev. Actually, we got a comment about him earlier. I think it was a friend of the show, Mateo, who said, got a lot of comments we got to get to. Sorry, guys. Please drop some more comments before we get out of here, because we're going to get to them. Super Chats also, they take over the show. So if you got any, please do. Mateo says, need to see Ortiz versus Mirtazayev now, too.
That's a good fight. That's a very good fight.
If Virgil Ortiz takes that fight, he's nuts.
I think that's the thing. I don't think he believes that he's going to lose to anyone. Like, I think he thinks he's sure. the best fighter every time he's in the ring. And so that's what I love about it. But that's like having a death wish. That's like trying to commit sue. You know, like,
okay, all right.
Yeah, like, that's a tough fight. Back, like, Bakram is a guy I feel like you don't want to fight in this division.
Where is Erickson Lubin?
That's a good fight.
Supposedly, he had a fight coming up in the spring that might be Pro Box TV, but I mean, it doesn't seem like it's official yet. He hasn't fought in a year and a half.
That feels like somebody's Xander Zayas to fight. Eric, yeah, but that's a tough fight for Xander Zayas. Like, that's a layup. No, and
it's good.
Lubin's only 29 years old, but I feel like he's like 38. Like, he's been around forever.
Yeah.
You know, and he's so underrated. Like, I'm a big fan of Erickson Lubin. I know he's got a couple of losses. I don't care about that. He's been in the ring with some dudes.
I think so. Okay, here's what I think happens. I think Virgil Ortiz, like I said, is probably like he's gonna get one of those. He's gonna get that WBC title one way or another. I'm not sure he has to beat Sebastian Fundora to do it. Like, I could see Fundora winning and then like both sanctioning bodies are like, hey, you have to fight your mandatory, and then he has to give up one of the titles. So it's like, oh shit. Yeah. Like, some bullshit's gonna happen here, honestly.
But not an email champion. Not an email champion. You know, we don't want that again. I just think that they can make a very entertaining fight, and it could be a blockbuster fight because I think Virgil Ortiz and Sebastian Fundora it's a massive fight. Maybe I'm being a nerd, but I love that fight.
How does it happen though? Like, Virgil's not going to PBC.
Yeah.
And I don't know the name. Look, Fundora, this could be the last fight in his deal for all we know. I don't know.
Like if that happens, then Turk's gonna come in.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
be like,
then,
guys.
Then that's the answer.
He's gonna be like, guys. And he's gonna come in. You know what I noticed? I hate that the fights are in Saudi. And I'm just gonna be honest here. And I think there's like so many underlying issues, and this is not sustainable. Like, I know everyone's like giving Turk props, like Ring Magazine.
It's not just them. It's the fans on his post. We're in a climate now where people are just falling all over themselves for dudes with money, essentially. Whether it's dude who's president, whether it's dude who owns Twitter, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, anybody else in that cabinet who's got bread, dude who runs Amazon, you know, all these people. And Turk is being treated the same way. Like, people are like worshiping him underneath his post. Thank you for saving boxing and all this bullshit.
But I think it's like the wrong thing to do because, like, I don't want to get like mad political here. But I don't know if you guys notice, but take a look at the crowd when you're watching these Saudi events. It's all men. It's like a sausage fest. Right, like usually in the States, when you go, like if you're dating someone, like guys will bring their girls, like there will be women in the crowd, like that's normal, and especially
it'll be like
in
that next week
seats.
At Barclays also,
yeah, and so that's normal here in North America, right? But if you look at Saudi, because there is an underlying issue, and I'm not trying to be political here, but the way that women are treated in Saudi is absolutely brutal. Yeah. Like, let's just call a spade here. And I'm taking a look at the crowd and there's no women there. And like, are we just going to gloss over the fact that this is happening and there's been so, like, there's so many issues going on there? Okay, this is the best fight. Aquarius Love. Thank you. But he's giving us good fights. Yeah. But like, you know, it's I don't know if I could just get down with it. And I was just thinking about it while I was looking at the crowd and I'm like, man, there's some real like world issues going on there. That's being glossed over the fact that he just gave us better BF Beeble too.
Like, there was a report about Maverick Carter talking with them about potentially starting some sort of basketball league that could, I don't know.
I did see that, and LeBron was going to be a part of it.
I'm like, what fuck are we doing, bro? Seriously?
Like, I don't know.
But to a lot of people, money is money, you know?
All money is good money, though. Like, not all money is good money, you know what I mean? Take a look at Steven. Maybe it's past their curfew, probably. this is a great comment, Steven. Thank you. Maybe it's past their curfew. Yeah, because, like, like, listen, I love the boxing fights too, but when I take a deeper dive into it, like the things that are going on there and the social issues, it's not a good thing. So it's like, are we going to continue to support this? I'll probably watch it. I'm being a hypocrite right now because I'm watching these fights, but like there are issues and I don't think this whole Saudi thing is sustainable. I think it's going to get out of hand with the boxers, depending on how much money they're getting and what they're asking for. And then the fans are going to be left in the dust.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I also think worshiping Turk or dudes with that kind of money is just fucking weirdo behavior anyway. Like, have some self-respect.
But nonetheless, Turk gives us good content to laugh at. And sure. So I'm okay with that. So for nonetheless, we'll drop it.
They're making good fights, but also, yeah. Like, I mean, Tank raises an interesting point. You could say what you want about his resume, and we have. But he says a lot of guys are going over there because they can't sell where they're from. Looking at Shakur Stevenson, who was booed in his own hometown and is fighting third to last on this card against Josh Padley, and before that, Floyd Schofield, not exactly the top of the line, not even top 10 for his WBC title in the rankings. Like, it's an interesting point because I don't know how much attention better BF Bivol gets, here, so to speak, because I feel like they were underrated even here.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's in Montreal, because better PF, like he'd
that would sell out. That would sell out like crazy. If they do that, like where the Habs play, that's selling out.
Yeah. But I don't know. We're at an interesting point where we're all this, but I just think we're at this phase now where, as it pertains to all the deeper things going on here, out there, where people are just worshiping people with money right now. That's just the phase that they're in. They sign themselves up for, you know, oligarchy, authoritarianism, whatever the case may be. And this is where we're at right now. We'll see if the pendulum swings at some other point. Ace brings us back to boxing. Thank you. Would you guys rather see, listen, these are important conversations, but I know some of y'all ain't trying to hear this shit, so we'll move it along.
Yeah, we're sorry.
Would you guys rather see Tank versus Shakur or Tank versus Teofimo? Tank versus Shakur for me.
I'd rather see Tank versus Teofimo, but I would love to see what I think Tank versus Shakur could be like one of the greatest fights of this generation because it's two of the best. I think Teofimo, like his antics lately have been kind of pissing me off. I think he's been taking it a little bit too far with the whole race stuff, even though he's trying to be funny.
He
it's
keeps
like
posting racist shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Like yeah, it's, you know what I mean? Like, so it's just not cool for me on my end. Especially with the whole monkey stuff. Like, he just keeps saying it. Like, he said it the other day. They're like, who would you rather fight? And he was like, whatever monkey wants to get the banana. It's like, come on, bro. Like, I don't know. Someone should tell him to stop doing that. Because he's just ruining his whole entire image. But if that's who he is, then that's who he is. And it's not a good look.
Keyshawn Davis, before he fought Dennis Berencik, they did the press conference. I was there for this one, where... Bomac, Coach McIntyre, came out and Keyshawn Davis said, like, when he showed up at the hotel, he was sent watermelon and bananas from Dennis Berencik, which later was found out it wasn't from Dennis Berencik, but it said it was from Dennis Berencik.
But I will say that's a good prank from Teofimo Lopez, like for him to do that. But what he was implying is terrible.
He apparently organizes it, and they showed a video of Keyshawn Davis sort of reacting to this, and Teofimo Lopez has a video. Someone's recording him like laughing while seeing this take place while eating a banana, which is obviously racist. And Teofimo Lopez, like, he knows what he's doing. And this has been going on for a while. Like, when he was at Top Rank, he was like, oh, Top Rank is favoring black fighters, this, that, and the third. And it's like, you know, there's just been a lot of questionable shit coming from Teofimo Lopez, who honestly, in terms of a name, is not as hot as he was at one point. So do wonder if it's going to be that. But to answer the question, Tank versus Shakur for me, because that's the fight I want to see more than any other fight in the sport. Even though I think that fight might be boring for a good amount, because I think they'll be trying to figure each other out. And then it's just a matter of, is Tank going to land the big shot, or is Shakur going to jab and straight his way to victory?
Yeah. And also, Ace, the issue is that two different weight classes. Tank is fighting at 135 pounds. Teofimo Lopez fighting at 140. And Tank only fought there when he fought Mario Barrios. And he doesn't like fighting there because he doesn't feel like it's his natural weight class. feels like 135 is. So I don't think that fight happens. But if it was to happen, I think he'd knock out Teofimo Lopez because Teo's chin is a little bit sus. I still want to see Tank and Loma or Tank and Shakur. So I would probably say Tank and Shakur would be the one that I would pick because I think it would tell us a lot of things about who actually is the greatest. And I think if Tank won, people would stop hating on him. And I think if Shakur was to have a crazy performance, people might stop hating on him too. It's one of those fights. Let's go over to Steven really quick before we get up and out of here. I have a feeling Turk will team up with Dana to monopolize the sport. The CEO of TKO wants to repeal the Ali Act.
The Ali Act, for people who don't know, was enacted in 2000 to protect the rights and welfare of boxers, to aid state boxing commissions with the oversight of boxing, to increase sportsmanship and integrity within boxing. I'm not even sure if those things are done to the level that they should be, is what I would say. But yeah, I don't think the monopolization would be good because I think what boxing fans think they want is they want everyone to be under one umbrella, like the UFC, under one organization so that everybody fights each other. But then what's going to happen in boxing is because we've been doing it this way for so long, if we start changing it and doing it that way, the boxers are going to make less and less. The promotions are going to make more because that's ultimately who cashes out at the end of the day. And I think the adjustment to that is going to be very, very difficult. Like, I'm highly skeptical of the reported boxing league that's supposed to be forthcoming. They're putting this under the banner of like, hey, we're trying to make the best fight the best. And I think while that's ultimately what everybody wants, on the terms we may and have been getting it on, like, it's not going to be something that sits right with a lot of people long term.
Yeah, let's get to Marlon 2631. He said Tank and Shakur needs to happen. Tank been in protection for too long. A lot of people think that Tank kind of has not cherry picked, but hasn't fought the best competition. I would disagree. I feel like there are some names on his resume, but people want to see a name like Shakur on his resume. So I'm okay with that. Brian, any final thoughts before we get up and out of here?
Yeah, he's got some good wins, but like, Lamont Roach is inexcusable, especially considering this is a fight that was originally scheduled to be late last year and they postponed it and still made it. It's like, why are we so insistent on getting this fight? You know what I mean? Frank Martin made sense. Ryan Garcia was great. Like, that was a good one. I mean, the rehydration clause, which you've talked about extensively, you know, probably not ideal, but yeah. Still, there's that. Hector Luis Garcia, I was probably higher on the most, and that was the first example. That was one example of somebody coming up in weight. Isaac Cruz, Roy Romero. Like, there's some good wins here, but this Lamont Roach one, this doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, this is the Tank
and fight. Lamont's moving up. He's moving up a weight class to fight Tank.
Yeah, which I don't love. Yeah. But he beat Hector Luis Garcia, so I mean, there's that. But I don't, like, if Lamont Roach makes it to like the distance here, hats off. I don't see that, though.
No, I'm taking Tank by knockout.
Yeah.
For sure. All right, guys. Thanks so much for joining us on this Saturday afternoon, evening, depending on where you are on the East or West Coast. We do appreciate you. If you like the content, make sure to hit that like and subscribe button. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. And Brian, I'll let you have the final words before we get up and out of here.
And even if you don't like the content, thank you for watching.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.